I want you to imagine, just for a second, sitting down at a really nice restaurant.
Oh, yeah, the kind with the heavy cloth napkins.
Exactly right. And the waiter places this perfectly seared, just incredibly juicy, medium-rare beefsteak right in front of you.
Sounds pretty ideal to me.
It is. You cut into it, take a bite, and it has that rich, savory, melt-in-your-mouth flavor that you fully expect from a premium cut of red meat.
Right, that classic beef experience.
But, and this is the crazy part, underneath that familiar taste, something totally invisible is happening. Your body is metabolizing that steak, and it's actually delivering the exact same cardiovascular and, like, brain-boosting health benefits as if you had just eaten a wild-caught fillet of salmon.
Which is wild because that really feels like a contradiction, doesn't it?
Totally.
I mean, we've spent decades putting red meat in this one very specific nutritional box, usually with a lot of warnings about saturated fat.
Yeah, the classic eat in moderation warning.
Right. And then we put oily marine fish in a completely separate, heart healthy category. So bridging that gap, it honestly sounds like pure science fiction.
But it's not. Bridging that gap is entirely possible, and that is actually the singular mission of our deep dive today.
And it is a fascinating topic.
It really is. So we're exploring this critical narrative review from 2026, published in the Australian Journal of Agricultural, Veterinary, and Animal Sciences.
By Stanley Ambin and his team.
That's the one. Ambin's team is detailing what is basically the absolute bleeding edge of agricultural science. We are looking at the bioengineering of what they call functional beef.
Functional beef, I love that term. And it's a highly complex sort of hybrid science. Like,
Yeah.
the researchers aren't just suggesting we, throw some fish oil into a cow's feed trough and call it a day.
Right, if only it were that easy.
Exactly. This review outlines this massive multidisciplinary effort to fundamentally rewrite the lipid profile of beef.
To actually change the fat itself.
Yes. They're combining specialized diets of marine microalgae with, advanced genetic mapping to basically pump bovine muscle tissue full of long-chain omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acids.
Which is just incredible. And for you listening, I mean, this matters because it completely changes our relationship with the food supply.
It really does.
Like, we see heart-healthy labels on packaging all the time, right?
Yeah.
And we rarely think about how they actually get there.
We just trust the label.
Exactly. But this review strips back the curtain on the staggering amount of, well, biological engineering that is required to change the fundamental nature of our food.
Yeah, it's not an accident. It takes a ton of work.
So to understand how scientists are engineering this super beef,
Yeah.
we first have to figure out why nature doesn't just, do it for us.
Right, the biological roadblock.
Yeah, like if we want a cow to produce healthy omega-3 fats, why not just feed it a field full of nutrient-dense grass or, I don't know, flaxseed?
Well, the problem there really comes down to the cow's incredibly unique digestive plumbing.
The pl
Yeah. The primary hurdle to enriching beef with omega-3s is this biological mechanism called ruminal biohydrogenation.
Okay, ruminal biohydrogenation, meaning essentially the cow's stomach actively destroys the healthy fats before they can do any good.
Essentially, yes. So a cow's primary stomach compartment, the rumen, is basically a massive, completely oxygen-free fermentation vat.
Just teeming with microbes, right?
It's billions of them. And
Yeah.
those microbes are essential because they break down the really tough plant fibers that mammals normally just can't digest.
Right.
But here's the catch. Those microbes do not like dietary unsaturated fats.
The exact healthy omega-3s we want.
Exactly. When a cow consumes these fats, the microbes deploy these enzymes called microbial lipases.
Okay, so these enzymes act like what, a defense mechanism?
They absolutely do. The lipases actively attack the unsaturated fats.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, first they isomerize them, which in plain English means they literally rearrange the physical shape of the fat
So
molecule.
you just bend it out of shape, basically. And then they pump those rearranged molecules full of hydrogen atoms.
Thus the biohydrogenation part.
We got it. By adding hydrogen, they convert these fragile, fluid, healthy, polyunsaturated fats into rigid, dense, saturated fats.
That's wild.
And all of this happens before the fat ever has a chance to be absorbed into the cow's bloodstream or deposited into the muscle tissue.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second. I am picturing the cow's stomach as, like, essentially a strict bouncer at a nightclub.
Okay, I like where this is going.
Right. So the club is the cow's muscle tissue, and the bouncer is just aggressively identifying and kicking out all the good unsaturated fats, or I guess forcing them to put on a heavy jacket of saturated fat before they're allowed inside the club.
That analogy actually works perfectly because, you know, the bouncer's acting out of self-preservation.
Oh, to protect the microbes.
Exactly. The rumen environment is highly delicate. If you introduce high concentrations of fluid unsaturated lipids, they can actually coat the plant fibers in the stomach.
And that's bad.
Really bad. It can suffocate or completely inhibit the very microbes the cow relies on to digest its food.
Oh, wow. So the bouncer is literally protecting the club from shutting down entirely.
Precisely. Which explains why simply feeding the cow standard plant oils or flaxseed is a complete dead end.
Because plants only provide precursor fats, right?
Right.
Like alpha-linolenic acid.
Right. The bouncer intercepts those precursors immediately. And even if a few manage to sneak past, the cow's internal machinery for elongating those short precursors into the long-chain EPA and DHA forms we actually want, it's severely constrained.
The conversion rate is basically terrible.
Incredibly low. Because the bouncer aggressively neutralizes the precursors, scientists realized that a direct dietary workaround was biologically necessary.
You can't just hand the cow the raw materials and hope it builds the omega-3s.
No, you really can't.
So we have to smuggle the finished product past the bouncer. We need a way to feed the cow preformed, long-chain EPA and DHA that can somehow survive the rumen.
And this review points to microalgae as the ultimate smuggling vehicle.
Right, because microalgae are basically the original source of these fats anyway.
They are the undisputed champions here. Like, fish don't magically synthesize marine omega-3s on their own.
They just eat the algae.
Exactly. They accumulate them by eating microalgae at the bottom of the food chain. So by feeding microalgae directly to the cattle, we are cutting out the middleman entirely.
Makes total sense.
The algae provide massive amounts of preformed EPA and DHA. But, and this is crucial, they also provide DPA, which is docosapentaenoic acid. The Ambin review highlights DPA as being absolutely critical.
Which is funny because DPA doesn't get nearly the marketing hype that EPA and DHA get.
No, it really doesn't.
Like, if you look at a standard over-the-counter fish oil supplement, DPA is rarely the star of the label.
It's totally the unsung hero of ruminant fats. In nutritional reporting, it often just gets lumped in with the others or ignored completely.
But in beef, it's actually highly relevant.
Extremely. It is frequently present in ruminant meat at concentrations equal to or even higher than EPA and DHA.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. So the Ambin review makes a very strong point that if future studies exclude DPA from their measurements, they are severely underestimating the actual total omega-3 contribution that the beef is delivering to the consumer.
So they had to measure the DPA. But, okay, getting back to the algae itself, here's where it gets really interesting for me. Are we just, like, dumping uniform vats of green pond scum into cattle troughs? How exactly does this work in practice?
It is so much more complicated than pond scum. The review makes it very clear that microalgae is a massive, diverse category.
Right.
You have to pick the absolute right vehicle for the specific fat you want to smuggle.
So the specificity is the key.
It is. Different strains of algae act in completely different ways. For example, if your primary goal is to pack the beef with DHA.
Which is the one that's crucial for human brain health and neural tissue development, right?
Exactly. If you want DHA, you would rely on strains like Schizochytrium or Orontiococcytrium.
And the review calls those strains heterotrophic.
Right.
Meaning they don't just sit in a pond using sunlight to grow like a normal plant.
Right. That's right.
They actually feed on organic carbon sources, which allows them to produce just staggering amounts of DHA in a tightly controlled environment.
Spot on. They are essentially biological DHA factories.
Amazing.
But if you want EPA, which is the one often targeted for cardiovascular health, you would pivot to a different species entirely, something like Nanochloropsis.
Nanochloropsis. Okay, and what makes that one special?
It's fascinating because it naturally possesses a rigid, highly complex cell wall.
Oh, so it's got its own armor.
Exactly.
Right.
That architectural trait acts like biological armor. When the cow eats it, that armor helps the EPA-rich lipids naturally bypass the rumen's degradation without any extra chemical processing.
The bouncer can't get through the armor.
Right. The microbes literally can't break down the cell wall fast enough, so the EPA sneaks right past the bouncer into the lower digestive tract where it can actually be absorbed.
That's incredible. It's literally wearing a disguise. But what if the algae doesn't have that natural armor?
Then scientists have to manufacture it.
Right. The review mentions techniques like microencapsulation.
Yes.
Where they essentially wrap the delicate marine fats in a protective microscopic bubble of, like, protein or calcium salts.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah.
Because then the bouncer interacts with the calcium salt, completely ignoring the fat hidden inside.
Which really proves just how nuanced this whole nutritional intervention is. It's not a simple feed additive.
Not at all. You can't just feed a cow spirulina or chlorella, you know, the stuff you might see at a local smoothie shop and expect a spike in omega-3s.
Wait, really? Because those are marketed as superfoods all the time.
They are, and they're great. Those strains are super high in protein and pigments and antioxidants, but they are not concentrated sources of these specific fatty acids.
I see.
You have to use the right strain, and often you have to engineer its physical structure just so it can survive the cow's digestion.
Okay, so let's play this out. The scientists are in the lab. They formulate the perfect feed. They use Nanochloropsis for its natural armor, or they microencapsulate the DHA. They successfully bypass the rumen bouncer, and the omega-3s make it straight into the cow's muscle tissue. Mission accomplished, right?
You would think so.
But wait, if we bypass the stomach's protective mechanisms and pack the muscle tissue full of these highly fluid, very delicate marine fats, aren't we essentially turning the cow into a giant sponge for fats that spoil at room temperature?
Yes. You've just identified the massive culinary wall that this research slammed right into.
Oh, no.
Yeah. They successfully smuggled the polyunsaturated fatty acids, the PUFAs, into the muscle. But the chemistry of those fats is literally their own worst enemy.
Why is that?
Well, polyunsaturated fats have multiple double bonds in their carbon chains. And in organic chemistry, every double bond is basically a point of vulnerability where oxygen can easily attack the molecule. Yeah. That makes them incredibly fragile and highly susceptible to lipid oxidation.
Meaning they go rancid fast?
Yeah, very, very fast. The review details these findings from Carvalho and colleagues in 2018 and then Phelps' team in 2016 and 2020.
What do they find?
Well, Carvalho's team fed steers 100 grams of DHA-rich microalgae a day. And on a purely biological level, it was a staggering success.
The meat changed.
Drastically. The EPA percentages in the meat jumped approximately fourfold, and the DHA jumped by a factor of over 6.
Wow, that is a massive biological transformation. So it worked.
It worked biologically, but the side effects were severe.
Oh.
First off, the cattle simply didn't like the feed. They ate less overall.
Okay, that's a problem for farmers.
A huge problem. But more importantly, when the meat from those steers was harvested and aged for 21 days, it showed significantly greater oxidative susceptibility.
The oxygen just tore the fats apart.
Exactly. And Phelps' research completely corroborated this. They showed that while feeding algae massively spiked the healthy fats, it led to premature browning of the meat in retail grocery displays.
Oh, so it just looks bad on the shelf.
Looks bad. And it induced rapid rancidity. And most devastatingly, it resulted in highly undesirable fishy flavors in the beef.
Oh, gross. Yeah, so what does this mean for, like, you and your backyard barbecue? Nobody's going to fire up their grill, throw on a premium steak, and hope it tastes like old fish.
Exactly.
If the fat oxidizes that quickly, the product is completely unsellable. So how on earth do scientists fix this?
Well, this is where we see the intense balance between clinical nutrition and sensory quality.
Right.
Because you can have the healthiest steak in the world, but if it turns gray on the shelf and tastes terrible, the intervention is a total failure.
Makes sense.
So the solution they are developing is multi-layered. First, they are leaning into the chemical properties of the microalgae themselves. Remember how we said strains like chlorella and spirulina might not have high omega-3s?
Yeah, that's smoothie stuff.
Right. But they are packed with natural carotenoids, tocopherols, and pigments.
Which are natural antioxidants, right?
Exactly. Antioxidants neutralize oxygen before it can attack those fragile double bonds.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah. By carefully managing the cow's diet to include these specific algal antioxidants right alongside the omega-3s, they can build a chemical shield directly into the muscle tissue.
Protecting those fatty acids from going rancid post-mortem.
That's the idea.
So they're using algae to protect the fats provided by other algae. That is biological balancing at its finest.
It really is.
But the review also suggests a second, more mechanical solution, right? A 2025 study by Ketret and team proposes that we shouldn't even be trying to make a heart-healthy ribeye steak at all.
Right.
They suggest that ground beef might be the most viable commercial pathway.
And the reasoning behind that is purely logistical.
Let me see if I follow their logic here. With a whole intact muscle, like a steak, the fat is marbled exactly where the cow decided to deposit it.
Right, it can't move it around.
Right. You have zero control over it once the animal is harvested. But with ground beef, the processor is in complete control.
Exactly where this is going.
You can take highly enriched omega-3 dense lean meat and strategically blend it with highly stable, antioxidant-rich fat sources.
That is the precise mechanism. Ground beef allows for a strategic post-harvest formulation.
It's just a math problem at that point.
Yep. You can easily manipulate the ratios in a grinder to maintain optimal color stability and palatability. You can precisely balance the omega-3 content with the antioxidant levels, basically completely avoiding the fishy flavor profile while mathematically hitting the exact nutritional targets required for a health label.
Wow, it makes complete sense. But, taking a step back for a second, forcing this biology through diet alone, dealing with the rumen bounce or rapid rancidity, the need to mechanically blend the meat, it just feels like we are constantly fighting the cow's natural biology.
It is an uphill battle.
Right. Diet seems like a temporary band-aid. What if the ultimate answer isn't in what we feed the cow, but hidden in the cow's DNA?
Ah, now you are tapping into the holy grail of this research sector.
The holy grail?
Yes, genotype by nutrition interactions.
Are we essentially talking about personalized prescription nutrition, but for cows?
That is exactly what we are talking about. It turns out cattle are not a monolith. They do not all respond to a microalgae diet in the exact same way.
Oh, interesting.
Some individual cattle are genetically predisposed to deposit these omega-3s highly efficiently and to inherently protect them from oxidation without ruining the meat's quality.
So instead of fighting the biology, we just find the cows whose biology is naturally built for this.
Precisely.
But how do we find them?
Well, the Ambin review dives deep into the genetic component of beef lipid traits. Researchers are mapping specific single nucleotide polymorphisms, or SNPs.
Wait, what exactly is an SNP?
A SNP is essentially a single letter typo in the billions of letters that make up the animal's DNA code.
Oh, okay.
Most typos do nothing at all, but some happen in critical areas and literally change the shape or function of a protein.
And that changes the fat.
Yes. They've identified candidate genes where these specific typos heavily influence fat synthesis, intramuscular fat, which is the marbling and the fat melting point.
Let's break down those candidate genes because the review focuses pretty heavily on three major ones, right? FASN, SCD, and FABP4.
Yeah, let's look at their mechanisms. So FASN is a gene that regulates de novo synthesis of fatty acids.
De novo meaning from scratch.
Exactly. It's the biological factory that builds fat molecules from scratch out of raw carbohydrates.
Got it.
If a cow has a specific SNP variation in FASN, that factory operates differently. Then you have SCD.
Okay, what does SCD do?
SCD is a gene that commands the enzymes responsible for introducing double bonds into saturated fats.
Ah, the double bonds we talked about
You're
earlier.
right. So SCD directly dictates the fat melting point, whether the fat is hard and waxy at room temperature or soft and fluid.
And finally, FABP4.
FABP4 acts like the internal plumbing system.
What?
It regulates the actual transport of fatty acids inside the cells.
Okay, plumbing.
Yeah. So if a cow has the right variations across these genes, it means their factory, their quality control, and their transport plumbing are all fully optimized to handle fluid, healthy fats.
Their baseline fat profile is just fundamentally different from a cow without those variations,
Completely different.
which totally explains the findings from that 2024 study by Otto and colleagues.
The Wagyu study, yes.
Yeah, they looked at pasture-based Angus, Hereford, and Wagyu cattle in Australia, and they found that Wagyu cattle naturally possess a genetic profile that gives them significantly higher intramuscular fat and a much lower fat melting point compared to the other breeds.
The Wagyu fat literally melts at a lower temperature in your mouth.
Right. And they naturally exhibit a much more favorable omega-3 composition even before you feed them any algae at all.
Exactly. The Wagyu breed provides the genetic proof of concept, but the real breakthrough is how researchers are identifying these traits in live animals.
Right, because historically, to truly understand the fat profile of a cow's muscle, you had to harvest the animal.
You can't breed a cow if it's already a steak.
Right, which completely defeats the whole purpose of trying to build a breeding herd of super cows.
Exactly. So this review highlights the incredible value of live animal muscle biopsies.
Wow, biopsies on cows.
Yeah. Using a specialized, minimally invasive tool, a vet can extract a tiny core sample from the longissimus dorsi muscle of a live elite breeding cow.
Just a tiny sample.
Yep. They send that piece of tissue to a lab. analyze the DNA for the specific SMPs, and physically measure the lipid profile of the muscle cells.
And the cow is fine.
Totally fine. The procedure takes minutes, the cow heals quickly and goes right back to the pasture, and the breeder is just handed a complete blueprint of that animal's genetic hardware.
That is precision livestock farming at its absolute peak.
Truly.
I mean, instead of the blunt force approach of buying expensive microalgae and just feeding it to a random herd of thousands of cattle, hoping it works, you use genomic predictions. You biopsy their herd, select only the specific animals that have the SCD and FABP4 genetic firmware designed to handle these fats, and then you feed those specific animals the expensive microalgae.
You achieve maximum nutritional output with minimal sensory side effects. It is the perfect synthesis of genetics and nutrition.
The science is undeniable.
It really is.
But this brings us to the commercial reality check.
Ah, yes. The real world.
Yeah, I'm putting myself in the shoes of a massive commercial feedlot operator right now.
Okay.
We are talking about mapping the genomes of cattle, performing live biopsies, sourcing specific armored microalgae, formulating natural antioxidants, and completely segregating these animals.
It's a lot.
Not to mention the regulatory hurdles. Mm-hmm. If a farmer has to run DNA tests on their herd and jump through all these hoops, isn't this going to be a $100 stake?
Well, the logistical and economic hurdles are immense. Let's just start with the regulations, like you mentioned.
Okay, yeah.
If you want to put a label on your packaging in Australia or New Zealand that says good source of omega-3, FSNZ, that's the Food Standards Regulatory Body, they do not care what you fed the cow.
They don't care at all.
Not one bit. They require strict, verifiable chemical thresholds of EPA and DHA per standard serving of the final meat product.
Wow.
Yeah, that requires continuous, highly expensive carcass-level testing just to ensure compliance.
Okay, so that's the regulation side. But what about the physical logistics of the feed itself?
Mm-hmm.
We know the meat goes rancid quickly, but what about the microalgae just sitting on the farm waiting to be eaten?
It's a nightmare. Polyunsaturated algae feed is incredibly unstable.
I imagine.
The review cites a study by Kopp and colleagues demonstrating that algae feed must be kept refrigerated at a constant 4 degrees Celsius.
Wait. Commercial feedlots are massive, dusty outdoor operations.
Oh, yeah.
You are telling me a farmer now needs the equivalent of a Costco-sized industrial walk-in refrigerator just to keep the cow's food from going bad before they even eat it.
That is the exact reality. The COP study tracked the peroxide values of the feed.
Peroxide value?
It's a chemical gauge for rancidity. It basically measures the degradation of the fats, sort of similar to how you might measure how quickly milk sours.
Okay, got it.
So to keep the peroxide values under a safe threshold of 5 milliequivalents per kilogram, it absolutely must stay cold.
And what happens if it doesn't?
If a farmer stores this algae feed in ambient tropical temperatures, say, above 30 degrees Celsius, it chemically breaks down and goes violently rancid within 60 days.
Yikes.
And the cows won't even touch it.
Wow. The infrastructural cost of refrigerating thousands of tons of cattle feed is just staggering.
It's massive.
So, connecting all these dots, this functional beef is not going to be a commodity product. We are definitely not going to see this in a discount meat aisle anytime soon.
No, the economics simply don't support it as a mass market commodity right now. To pull this off, a producer needs completely segregated supply chains. They need separate labeling, specialized airtight packaging to prevent retail oxidation, and as we said, refrigerated feed silos.
Yeah.
It requires a massive market premium to offset the costs of all that genotyping and specialized logistics.
So where does this actually launch? Who is buying this?
It'll likely enter the market through premium niche channels first.
Like what?
Think specialized health-oriented food services, high-end restaurants, or premium branded ground beef programs. Basically, places where the consumer is explicitly seeking out and totally willing to pay a premium for verifiable cardiovascular health benefits tied to red meat.
Okay, bringing this all together, we started with a seemingly impossible premise, right? A steak that's as heart healthy as salmon.
Yep.
And what we have uncovered is the staggering multidisciplinary journey required to make that an actual reality.
It's incredible.
Scientists are outsmarting the cow's rumen bouncer by smuggling preformed omega-3s via armored microalgae. They are neutralizing culinary disasters, like fishy flavored beef, by weaponizing natural antioxidants and manipulating ground beef ratios.
Absolutely.
And most profoundly, they are reading the bovine genome to identify the exact single-letter genetic typos that allow a cow to act as the perfect biological sponge for healthy fats.
it represents a total paradigm shift in agriculture.
It really does.
For centuries, we have selectively bred and fed animals simply to make them grow larger and faster.
Right, just bulk them up.
Exactly. But now we are feeding them and mapping their genetics to fundamentally rewrite their nutritional value to the human body.
I want to thank you for taking this deep dive with us today. For everyone listening, the next time you are in the grocery store and you pick up a package of meat touting some specific health benefit, you will now understand the absolute mountain of biological engineering, genetic screening, and cold chain feedlot logistics it took just to get that simple label printed on the plastic.
We have definitely moved far beyond farm to table. We are entering the era of genome to table.
Genome to table. I love that. Which leaves us with a final thought to mull over. If we are currently on the verge of using precise nutrition and live genomic markers to completely rewrite the fat profile of a cow, what other biological limitations in our everyday agricultural staples are just waiting for a genetic and dietary firmware update?
Oh, the possibilities are endless.
Could tomorrow's fast food burger actually be the exact hyper-personalized meal prescribed by your cardiologist to manage your lipid panel? Imagine sitting down at that restaurant, ordering a juicy steak, and knowing it's not a dietary cheat day. It is exactly what the doctor ordered.
That is a fascinating future to prepare for.
Until next time, keep diving deep.